Tom Gimble joins us now on the Noon Business Lunch. He is the job expert and the founder of the LaSalle Network. Happy New Year, Tom.
Happy New Year to you, John.
Do you want to talk about the Bears at the beginning of this conversation or the end of this conversation?
Let's just do a quick bear down right now, and then at the end we'll circle back to what the loss means.
So the news click question we asked our listeners was, after that game, do you feel better about the team, the same as you felt about the team, or a little worse about the team after that last-second loss to the 49ers?
I felt the same, if not better. What they proved is they can hang with anybody, and if you take a coach in his first year and a quarterback in his second year and his first year with this system, you got to be proud of what they did to hang with a team that's got a guy who's been to a Super Bowl and a coach who is in his eighth year of coaching.
We asked our listeners, and almost half of them said they actually feel better about the team's chances in the playoffs after the loss to San Francisco, and I'm with them.
Overcoming adversity is something that makes you stronger. I mean, we talk about this a lot in business, but it's in life. To have to overcome something, to know that you don't always win, to show that you can get close but not do it, it makes you dig in a little bit deeper and get stronger for the next game, the next year, the next what have you.
What's your postscript for 2025? What do you say about the year past?
I think it was tough. I think 2025 was hard for most people. I think it was a year of resiliency. I think we were hoping that it was going to turn around after a tough 24, and we dig through. I think the hardest thing for everybody is you got to clear your head of the things you can't control, the stuff going on in politics and the anger and the vitriol that exists out there, and really focus on what you can, your career, your family, your health, and such, and kind of sort through the noise a little bit.
You know, you are a job expert. You're an employment guy. I didn't ask you about the stock market. The stock market was great. Our next guest is going to say it was like a saying from Mary Poppins. The line is, and it's not a spoonful of sugar. It was practically perfect in every way. That's my next guest, Paul Nolte. But on the employment front, about actually trying to find a job, It was challenging, I'm hearing, for people. What was it? Was the no hire, no fire year, something like that?
Well, I think there was some firing going on, but there definitely wasn't as much hiring. I think what this year showed us more than anything, combining on those two topics of the stock market and the labor crisis, is that for the first time in most of our lives, we've seen that the economy, which we relate to jobs and the cost of things and the rise or fall of the stock market, are not always in sync.
Yeah.
That's been the real, if you look at a business story, that's it. How can the stock market be at record highs and companies making more money, yet it's very hard to find a job and inflation and things cost more? And that's both of those things happened.
And that's where we feel the divide in this country. So a lot of people have jobs, and some of them are nice jobs, and whatever the situation is, their retirement funds have really ballooned. And then there's the group of people who are struggling to find work or are underemployed, and they are not participating in this boom.
Well, I always think that the underemployment thing is an interesting topic because, you know, if you're really good in an area, usually there's a job for you. Now, we're not in a full-blown depression or even close to a recession when it comes to the jobs market. And sometimes you have to look and say, the reason you don't have a job is maybe you weren't as good as you think you were. And you have to look and say, maybe this is an opportunity for me to A, reinvent myself, B, find what my transferable skills are, C, to do something that can actually make me happy. And in a booming economy, people can get jobs and or make really good livings doing things they're not particularly good at, because companies are in such dire straits to find people, they'll overpay for anybody. Now we're in a situation where they're not in dire straits, and it's a little bit tougher for people to find a job.
Yeah, but there used to be a whole load of jobs. You would go work for Caterpillar. You would go work for Ford. You would go work for some of the major American manufacturers or corporations, and you were set for life. And you would make enough money that your kids had nice clothes, they could go to an affordable college, you could take a good vacation. I don't know that those jobs are there or that they pay what they used to.
Well, I think there's probably something to that, John. At the same time, we also used to have a country where people would relocate out of state for a job. People didn't complain about having to go into the office. People would be happy to get a job when they didn't have one rather than waiting around for the perfect job. So I think that we've also created it. We've had a really unique intersection of the jobs that were there may not be there, but also the level of effort that people would put forth to do something has waned as well.
See, that's why I'm pushing back, because you're making it sound like the reason some people are having trouble finding work or good work is their fault. And I think things have changed. It's apples and oranges right now, and that we ought to acknowledge that some of the headwinds that people face are real. And it's not because they're lazy. It's not because they're not as good as they think they are. It's because some of those jobs aren't there, or they don't pay that well anymore.
Well, John, I would tell you that I think that if a lot of people had been going into the office, they might not have been on the top of the chopping block, because they would have, out of sight, wouldn't have been out of mind. You would have been in the office. And I think that there's a lot of people saying, you don't get it, Mr. Boss. Jobs is the market's changed. We don't have to go in anymore. Well, now you're unemployed, or now you don't have a job paying as much. And I think that what's ended up happening is sometimes we reap what we sow. I'm not saying corporate America is great. I'm not saying that they're the best at taking care of everybody. I'm not. But I am saying that sometimes we have to look in the mirror. And I know a lot of people that won't relocate for a job. I know a lot of people that won't go and take a lesser job and work their way back up, because I deserve what I had before. And that's not how you build out of something that sucks. You build out of something that sucks by putting your head down and saying, I'm going to show these people what I'm made of, and I'm going to take whatever job I can and then rise up. And sometimes during a down economy, that's what you have to do.
We may be talking about different sections of the economy. I'm going to pause here. You and I will pick it up in a minute. You were also talking about journaling. I wonder what you have to say about that. We're visiting with Tom Gimbel, the job expert and founder of the LaSalle Network. We're talking to Tom Gimbel. He is the job expert and the founder of the LaSalle Network. Tom, you know that when you and I visit, almost always we get a lot of reaction from these conversations, and then I always send you a screen grab of them so you know what people are saying.
Yep. What do we got today?
and they're almost always very complimentary to you, aren't they?
I feel like a lead up to today's not.
Well, I'm just reading one that was handed to me. I cannot disagree with Tom Gimbel more. He's making a statement about a very narrow group of people regarding relocation. You and I were talking about how difficult it is for some people to find a job. And you say, well, then maybe you're not as good as you thought you were, or you're not working hard enough. You said you know people who wouldn't even relocate for a job. There's a lot more to this job market than what he is sharing. I've been a recruiter for 35 years, and this is an incredibly unique and uncharted time, says one of our listeners. I'll let you respond to that before we move on. What do you want to say, Tom?
I think uncharted times, all perspective. I've been in the recruiting space and the business space for almost 30 years, and I think we had really tough times in 01 after 9/11 and the bubble bursting, the dot-com bubble, and obviously in 08 and 09, and then for 3 months that were maybe the three scariest months of in 2020 that we've ever been through. And so I think that it's really easy in the moment to think that it's the worst ever. I don't think that's the case. I do think that if things aren't going the way you want, you got to still play a hand. And whether that's relocating, and I'm not saying it's easy with kids and houses and mortgages, it's tough, it's challenging. But to sit there and say, I can't find a job, when there, you have to maybe pivot, and you have to look in the mirror and say, am I as good as I thought I was?
You also wrote, if you are going to join a new company, sometimes it's best to pick a company that has had problems and is not doing well. Why would you say that?
I think everybody wants to be part of the rocket ship, but sometimes coming in on the rebuild, I mean, let's real quick, because I know it's not the topic of the day, but look at the Bears. If you only wanted to join the best team, maybe you're a second string player, a third string player, who knows where you go. You join the Bears this year with a new coach coming off a terrible season last year, a new regime, you get in on this thing, and now look where you are in a division winner and the number two seed, hopefully, in the playoffs. And I think it's the same thing in business, whether there was a scandal, whether a CEO got fired, there's new people. Sometimes those are the best companies to join, because you're part of the rebuild. You're part of the new regime, and you get to show what you're capable of doing.
You get more reps if you're with a struggling team, maybe. It reminds me of my kid when he was in youth sports, and there'd be an A team and a B team for baseball or softball or basketball or whatever. And if you were the 16th best kid in the basketball program, you were the star of the B team. So you got to play and you got better. If you were the 10th best kid in the program, you sat the bench for most of the game on the A team. You got more reps if you were maybe on a struggling program and had a chance to prove yourself.
That's exactly right. And listen, depending on where things are and what your role in life is, there's differences, right? When you get to it, that's great when you're playing in the middle school team. When you're on the high school team, if you want to be part of the team, your only shot is to ride the bench. And so you got to pick at where you are in life and what's important to you in that moment. But joining a company that isn't the Google or the Amazon and the rocket ship, the Nvidia, but the company that people maybe haven't heard of, or maybe it had a little bit of a struggle or what have you, and you get your foot in the door and you get the opportunity to do something, you know, don't always look for what's the shiny new toy. Sometimes you take something and you just go with it.
Yeah. I sat the bench for most of my high school and junior college career on the basketball team, and I was always hoping that we would get blown out or be winning by 30, and then they would deign to put me in the game. Like,
you were a 20-20-20 guy.
What does that mean?
Down 20, up 20, or 20 seconds left.
That was me. And I'm like, well, this isn't a very good heart to have, sitting there on the bench hoping that Rico fouls out, and then maybe I get a chance to go in. But I wanted to play, and I was kind of a bench rider. Why are you saying journaling is something to think about? How do you do that?
Well, I think there's a couple things. I think sometimes it just gets this, you know, this view or perception that it's, you know, a 12-year-old girl putting a journal under her mattress and writing sob stories, and I don't think that's it at all. I think when you're going through business every day, and you can write down the wins and the losses that you've had on a daily or a weekly basis, it puts things in perspective. And to write down, you know, to really be honest with yourself that no one else is going to see, where did I fall short? What could I have accomplished? What did I not do as well as I could have? What were my problems with my boss? What did my boss say nice to me this week? All of these things. And if you do that on a regular cadence, and then at the end of the quarter, you can go back and look, and you actually have almost a self-described chart of what your wins and your losses, your highs and your lows were. And if you really want to take it to the next level, you can take that information and you could feed it into an AI tool and say, summarize my quarter of notes on what my wins and losses were.
Really?
And get an unbiased feedback on what you've written down.
And then ask AI, how did I do this year based on my journal? And it'll read that and then give you tips or talk to you, huh?
For sure. It'll give you a summary of what you did and spit back to you of what your highs and your lows were. It'll also give you really good information to be able to go into an annual, or hopefully a quarterly review with your boss and be able to say, these are the things that I did well. This is where I failed. You know, John, one of the things that people do is, oh, I want to improve. I want to get better. But then when they get feedback, they get defensive and they take it as a negative. You don't get better by hearing how great you are. You get better by hearing what you're not doing well. You have to go into a review knowing what you did poorly and wanting to hear what you did poorly, and then working with your boss to create a plan on how to get better.
I don't think I want to know what AI would say about my journal. Okay. hey, John, I love this guy. Tom, look, a text is poured in because he puts the onus back on those that are complaining. The next one says, I don't think this is the worst job market ever. I think that AI is only going to be more and more of a game changer. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a real game changer. Now, whether it's in 5 years or 10 years, I'm not smart enough to know that. But I do think it's going to change. And, you know, the real hope I have is that our leaders, both professionally or in business and politically, can get their act together to make sure that society doesn't get crushed as we evolve technologically.
And this note, I work in a school district and we have to drive vans to other towns to pick up students because we have parents living and working in hotels to try and make ends meet after they lived in their cars. Do you want to tell them that they're not good enough, Tom?
It's not a matter of good enough as human beings. It's good enough in a skill set and a job. And I don't blame necessarily the people on where they're at today, but somewhere along the lines, we are the pieces put together of our lives. And a lot of times people want to say, well, I'm working really hard now at 45. Well, what were you doing at 25 and 30? Because maybe at that time you weren't laying the groundwork to be in a stable place today. Life is a series of struggles and challenges that we have to work hard to overcome. And we've got to pull our head out of the sand in the moment and look about what we need to do next. I have great empathy, and I believe in charity and philanthropy and helping people up, but we also have to have accountability.
One last question, Tom, different topic, but I take seriously what you've been saying. These are interesting and sometimes painful topics, but back to the Bears for 1 second as we wrap up this conversation. How many playoff games do the Bears win this season?
I think I'm going to assume we get 2 games at home being a division winner. So I think we win 2. And I think we'll see who we play in the NFC Championship. But I think we win the wild card. I think we win the division round. I like this team a lot. I like Ben Johnson a lot. And I think they've shown resiliency and now they're ready. That was the best full game of football this team's played all season. And it was against a really good team. Bear down, John. Bear down.
One of the strangest games, too. Tied at 7, tied at 14. Tied at 21, tied at 28, tied at 35. That's never happened before in a regular season NFL game. It was touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. Tom, we will talk to you in the new year. Thanks for your time today.
Waldron Lot on Sunday, Tom Gimble tailgate. Hope to see you there, John.
Lots of texts pouring in about that conversation with Tom Gimble. Golly, I wonder why. We'll read some of them after the news. We've got other guests to talk to, too, including Paul Nolte about the markets and Michael Miller about the economy. This is the Noon Business Lunch on WGN at 12:37. Neil Fisher's our producer today. I'm John Williams, and Tom Gimble was on a little while ago. Just a couple of the texts that have come in. I really don't like this guy. Tom, that one's for you. You guys need to put Tom Gimble on the workers' mic some Sunday morning. There is a show with labor members, union members, and they talk about union issues and labor from a worker's perspective. It's called The Worker's Mic on Sunday morning. And some of you will agree with the things those people say and some of you won't. But it's a really good show, and it's a very interesting perspective. And I think that they would disagree with some of the things that Tom just said. Tom, I want to take the same tone with another aspect of life. And then this person said, I work out, I'm really healthy, but I don't have a six-pack abs like I used to. And that's because times do change, things are different, and it's not all work, but it goes on to make the analogy to disagree with what Tom was saying. What else do we have here? John, I agree with your guest. During my 40-year career, I went through many recessions, which were far worse than today's perceived bad times. The current media tends to make the situation sound worse than it is. Let's talk to Paul Nolte. He's a senior wealth advisor and market strategist at Murphy and Sylvest Wealth Management. Paul, welcome back to the show. How are you today?
I'm doing very well. Happy early new year.
I did want to say something about that, because earlier we were talking about the cost of inflation, and I've seen some people say that the media blows it out of proportion. Yes, inflation is a real thing. Everything always costs more this year than it did last year. It's not as bad as we make it out to be. And yet I also saw a post this morning from someone who said they went back and they had saved on their phone a list, it was maybe a receipt from Walmart or Sam's Club or Costco, and it was from like 5 years ago. And the person said, I then punched in the very same items for now at the same store, and the increase was like 75% more expensive. They said, we can't go on like this. So I don't know what it is. Is the media blowing it out of proportion, or are things really much more expensive, much more difficult now than they were as recently as before the pandemic?
Yes. And here's the reason behind it is when you have inflation like we did during the pandemic, where prices were going up 10% a year over year, inflation is cumulative. So that $100 now is $110. And then maybe it comes down to 5%, and then it goes to $115, $116. Now inflation's only running at 2%. You say, well, that's great, but the price is still now 16% above what it was a few years ago, and now we're only tacking on an extra dollar or so, which doesn't seem like a lot, but it's compounded on top of what came before. So that one person that was looking at their receipt from 5 years ago saw that cumulative impact of inflation. So inflation today, moderate, not bad, but it's on top of what has preceded it. And that's part of the reason why we see prices where they are and some people surprised by it. And wages haven't quite kept up to that level, certainly early on. They're starting to now, but we're not there yet.
Been a good year in the markets, though, right?
Oh, it's been a fabulous year, and it's been a surprising year because we're coming off of 2 years where we had 20% returns in each of the prior 2 years. You would expect the market to take a breather. It kind of did around Liberation Day, but after that, it never looked back. We've had eight consecutive months now of market increases, and the S&P 500 is up 15-19% or so, and the average stock. Actually, for investors that are looking elsewhere, international, gold, even small cap and value have done as well or better than the S&P 500. So a diversified portfolio this year for the first time in a while. Actually, they're looking pretty good.
When's this thing going to correct, Paul?
That's why I'm talking to you, John. Otherwise, I'd have my own private island somewhere. We don't know, and that's part of it. We can't. If we knew when that was going to happen, we'd all be very wealthy. We think at least the economy is doing well, probably will continue to do well. We're not seeing signs yet of an economy ready to roll over. So we're going to stay with the program until we start to see signs where stocks are going to take a back seat.
Yeah.
They're not there yet.
And that assumes, though, that it won't be so precipitous that you won't have time to get out of the way, that it'll be accumulation of events or numbers, and that would cause you to become more defensive. Is that what you're telling me?
That's generally the way we look at it. So we tend to look at the economy. We tend to look at earnings. Earnings this year on the S&P were up 14%. So, again, a good year, and the markets were up 14-plus percent. The markets are still expensive from a valuation perspective. They're among the highest in history, but it's a poor timing tool. It will tell you that over the next 3 to 5 years, maybe the markets won't be that great, but it doesn't tell you that March 15th of 2027, the market's going to be 30% below where it is today.
Is there something you're watching? I don't want to say worried about, but I'll say worried about. And 2026, what's of concern to you? What would be one of those things that you would say, okay, now we do need to pull back?
Well, we've been focused on two things, really, is wage and employment. Employment all through this year has actually been pretty good. When we take a look at the weekly jobless claims numbers, they've been following in general with what we've seen prior to the pandemic. Now, the headline, non-farm payrolls, different story. But the jobless claims numbers are ones that we take a look at. That, for us, is a big concern. And we'll be watching the earnings season. We'll be listening to companies and what they have to say about what they're seeing in their end markets. So those are two things, I think, that investors can look at on a regular basis and judge for themselves how things are going.
I'll stop asking this question because I seem to be the only one obsessing about it. Obsessing's not the right word, but are you concerned about what the Supreme Court is going to say about the president's ability to use tariffs?
Not really. We haven't seen, certainly that was the biggest concern, that was that tariffs were going to foment this huge spike in inflation. The economy was going to roll over. The world was coming to an end, and part of the reason why the markets fell apart in April. But what we've experienced over the last 8 months has been the economy has been able to recover. People adjust. Maybe we're not buying the same goods and services that we did before. We've altered some of that. So the other part of it is, from strictly a political perspective, Congress can take that control back.
Yeah.
They had that control. They have decided to punt. So there is something else that can be done.
That is, the tariffs could still exist, just under different authority.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Paul, we're out of time. We always appreciate you coming on with us. You are the Senior Wealth Advisor and Market Strategist at Murphy & Silvest Wealth Management. That's Paul Nolte. We'll visit again in the new year, Paul.
We'll do it then. Thank you.
This is the New Business Lunch. We visit now with Michael Miller, economics professor at Western Washington University. Longtime professor over at DePaul. We still like to talk to him wherever he is. Hi, Michael. How are you?
I'm doing real well, John, and Happy New Year to you.
What's the weather like in your state today?
Ah, wow. You know, Bellingham, this time of year, is always cloudy and rainy, and we've had 3 days of sunshine. So I'm enjoying it very much. We're in the 40s, and it's great.
I guess you do live in a cloudy climate if you go, wow, 3 days of sunshine. That's a celebration there.
At least this time of year. During the summer, we never see a cloud. So.
Yeah, well, it sounds lovely. And actually, we've had plenty of clouds here in Chicago. We saw some sun earlier and yesterday, but I'll take the sunshine when I can get it. Sun, here's the segue now. Is the sun going to shine on us in 2026? How do you review maybe the economy this year and where we are right now?
Well, a lot of things are in place for having a good 2026, assuming that that all the policies go into effect the way they're supposed to under the big, beautiful bill. Those of us like myself that are on Social Security will be paying less in taxes. People will earn overtime and not pay taxes. People will get tips and not pay taxes. These will all be stimulative. So when you see that, and also some of the, when it comes to April, when we have to pay our taxes, there will be some things built in from 2025 that will make our returns larger. So in terms of stimulus from the government, and then if the Fed lowers interest rates even one more time, maybe, not sure it should, but if it did, I think it could be a very strong 2026.
You don't think they're going to, the Fed meets in January, right? They're not going to do it then?
Right. I would be a little surprised. I think they're going to want to look at more data to make sure that inflation is in fact falling, because that's the thing they have to fight. They have to fight the inflation. They can try to add to employment some, but we are still very close. Just like your guest was saying, the labor market is not that bad. People are not being fired. People just having hard time finding jobs, and that's why the unemployment rate has ticked up a little bit.
Are you worried about those 6 weeks of missing numbers we didn't when the government shut down? And so while the number looks inflation looked to be trending in the right direction, do you think that's real?
That's what we have to find out. I do think it's real, because there's not if you take a look at things like the commodity prices, when you look at the ability of firms to raise prices when the economy is slowing a little bit, then you would think that the inflation might be under control. And, I mean, getting better, that would be the way to put it. But the Fed needs more data. They can't make a decision based upon a guess.
Yeah. And about the new year, I'm a little confused about this, but when they passed that big, beautiful tax bill, that was going to lower some taxes for some Americans. Have we realized those fully yet, or will it not be, in fact, until we file our income tax returns that we start to see some of the results of that?
What it did is it kept the tax rates where they were before, because the Democrats essentially voted to allow us to have what would be the largest tax increase in history, because Mr. Trump had lowered the taxes, but with a sunset, and the sunset would be the end of this year in the next 2 days. And had they not passed that big, beautiful bill, we would have seen on January 1st an enormous increase of $1,500 to $2,000 per household in federal taxes. And so what will happen is that there won't be that much change, except for those things I mentioned, the Social Security, the tips on the tax on tips, the tax on overtime. And, of course, overtime is something that a lot of the people in the trades, they will make that money. People who are servers and stuff will make these tips. And, therefore, a lot of that money will accrue to the people at the bottom of the income brackets. And, and that, I think, is good. It's good for society.
Well, I wanted to read you to you. You said counter to the dour consumer sentiment the country today. It turns out that over the last 5 years, workers have earned an increase in real inflation-adjusted income, an increase in real inflation-adjusted income. And guess who's done better? Who's done better, Michael?
the people at the bottom. And, you know, the study was done by the some economists at the Cleveland Fed. Now, they did begin it in 2019, and 2019 was an exceptional year, and it was exceptional for the people at the bottom rung of incomes because of the way the labor market worked at that point. They were making major increases. If you look at it like your guest was just saying, with the thing about the inflation, it is cumulative. If you look at your wage increases, those also are cumulative. And what these economists looked at, let's compare how well people at the top versus people at the bottom did cumulatively over the last 5 years. That was 19 to 24. And he found that the people in the lower 60% did better than the people at the top, and that everybody got a raise, 4.5% for the people at the bottom, 3.5% for the people at the top, adjusted for inflation. Now, add to that, since January of 2025, the data we have shows that wages are up, adjusted for inflation, about 1%. So we're up 5% across the board. I know people think, and it's your previous guest was talking about, you go to the store, you look at that accumulated price increase, and that's what you react to, because the president promised what he wanted to do was to lower prices. He should have never made such a promise, because he can't do that. What he should have promised was he's going to try to get the increase under control, which is beginning to happen.
Yeah,
but that's people are, in a sense, thinking the prices should be lower, and they're not going to be lower.
That's a lousy bumper sticker, though. I'm going to decrease the increased price of goods and services. and yet, that's really about all you can expect. Michael Miller, we're out of time today. We so enjoy your conversation this year. I hope you'll continue to join us in the new year.
It'll be my pleasure, John.
He's an economics professor at Western Washington University.